Welcome to the Ask for Football Army Football Show. The Army Football Show is an insider's guide for cadets, old grads, and college football fans to follow the Army team throughout their season as they seek to beat Navy and claim the Commander-in-Chief's trophy. Ask for Football is brought to you by our sponsor, Jocelyn Bradley Real Estate. Whether you're buying, selling, or just exploring your options, Jocelyn Bradley is the expert you can trust to navigate the real estate market with ease. Visit jocelynbradley.com to learn more. And let's get started at the Ask for Football Army Football Show. Welcome back to the Ask for Football Army Football Show. We say it's the Ask for Football Army Football Show, but hey, check it out. We're talking spring sports and lacrosse again. How are we doing today, fellas?
Never better. I will say it's a shame James isn't on here to explain what happened with RPI this week, because Army has done nothing but win, and yet somehow they dropped from number four to number five in one of the polls, and their RPI has steadily gone from like eight down to 11. I mean, it's so power conference heavy that it's almost, conspiratorial. Like, it's nuts. And over in college football land, I know they're talking about maybe giving some of the power conferences auto bids to the college football playoff. But if this is the way that they're going to do it, it's just nutty, because these teams get so much credit for just being in a conference. It's driving me bananas.
Yeah, I agree. Omar, how about you?
Doing great, but arguably worse after hearing that we got screwed on the lacrosse front. I do have a question, though. Is there not a human element with RPI? Like, do they not factor in human polls? Because
no,
that naturally comes to mind. Okay.
Yeah, so that's the frustrating thing, is that there's no human element at all. It's just straight metrics, and the metrics are all based on strength of schedule. And the strength of schedule is all based on your conference. And so if you start by saying, well, all the teams in the ACC are the best teams, then the ACC is going to have the highest strength of schedule, because you already decided that those are the best teams. You know, it's like in the same way that Alabama never loses a hypothetical football game, you know, the power conferences have just given themselves an absolute leg up, and it's very frustrating.
Yeah, I'll comment on that real quick, because it seems like that's just one of the things that is going on with college football right now, is, or even just college sports in general, right? Are we advocating too much for the Power Four conferences? You know, are we giving them too much credit? Because again, at some point, you have to win the contest that you're involved in.
Yeah.
You know, so let's not set the playoff bracket before the season even starts.
I mean, North Carolina is so far ahead of Army in terms of RPI, which is just a straight metric. And I'll be the first to admit that they have played a harder schedule, but we know these two teams played on the field. Like, they settled this on the field already. So to be like, we're going to take North Carolina over Army, like, that's nuts. So,
yeah, especially like after losing to him 2 years in a row, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. It'd be different if they were like 1-1, or this was like the season decider or something like that, and it was a closer game or whatever. But at the end of the day, you know, if you beat a Power Five team, you should probably get credit for it. Like, doesn't make any sense to me. But speaking of credit, we have somebody that we got to get credit for helping you find a new home. And if you're PCSing to the Fort Bragg area, we have the right realtor for you. Her name is Jocelyn Bradley. Jocelyn is a military veteran who spent her career in the Army in logistics. There, she discovered her passion for making a difference in people's lives. She's committed to helping her clients find their dream homes, and does exceptional work when she's working for you. Jocelyn has decided to support us here at Ask for Football this season and next season, which is going to be great. She's the right person to get you into the home of your dreams. Jocelyn is also an extended network of veteran realtors who can support you if you're moving somewhere else into the country. So if you're in the market for a home, Jocelyn should be your first call. Guys, if you're not moving specifically to Bragg, she can help you find somebody that can point you in the right direction. Won't cost you anything. Reach out to her and she'll get you set up.
So Army football held their spring game a couple weeks ago. I hesitate to say that it's old news now, because it's only about 10 days old, but you've probably heard about it by now. The black team won 16-14. I do not think that the teams or the scores are particularly important. Rising firstie Dwayne Coleman took snaps with the ones. He is unquestionably the number one quarterback right now. He worked about 50-50% from the shotgun and under center. He is the only guy I saw who really took meaningful snaps from under center. Rising Cal Kale Helms looks like the current number two. He took like a few snaps under center. He's not a huge dude, but he's a really shifty runner. I mean, I went in there. I guess I probably shouldn't admit this, but I went in there honestly as a Hellum skeptic, but I thought he played really well in a non-contact scrimmage. You know, he's down with one hand on the jersey, and he still managed to, you know, run up the middle several times for, you know, 5 to 7 yards, which is very difficult in traffic when one hand puts you down, right? And you know, Bryson Daly in this game last year looked terrible because, you know, his best thing is running through contact. Dudes were putting one hand on him left and right last year in the spring game. So I was actually cheered by that a little bit. Rising yearling quarterback Ethan Washington, honestly, is he's a very slender dude at 6'1", 190. Like, he's not big, but he has maybe the best arm I've ever seen on an Army quarterback. This dude has a very, like, languid, like, smooth throwing motion. He was easily, just during warmups, he was easily throwing 25 to 30 yard throws, flat trajectory. You know, when we talk about a strong arm, you don't measure an arm at in college or the pros by how far a dude can throw. Like, these guys are expected to be able to throw far. It's how quickly can they get the ball there and how on target is it? And so the flatter the trajectory, the faster the ball's moving, the less chance the defensive back has a chance to sort of break on the ball. That's what you want to see. And Washington, he looked better in that sense, you know, with the stronger arm, just, you know, a flick of the wrist throwing motion than I've ever seen. They had him line up under center several times, but he checked out of it 100% of the time back to the shotgun. So I don't know what you can take from that. And then fullback Briggs Bartosz and wide receiver Liam Fortner both stood out quite a bit. Bartosz broke a ton of tackles. Like, that dude looked great. He was a very impressive combination of shifty and powerful. And Fortner has very clearly become the team's go-to wide receiver. So it was good to see that they have a sense of who those guys are going to be and how that's going to work out. I will say numerous guys hit field goals effectively from, like, reasonable collegiate distances all night long. And rising yearling punter Matthew Falk dropped a punt on the 4 yard line. So special teams is, like, way ahead of where we've seen them before. And also, we might have a battle for starting punter, which is, like, the kind of thing that is crazy, but yet here we are. And then last thing, team had kind of a lot of injuries heading into the spring game. So, you know, we know that they have good O-line depth, but my sense is that they got tested quite a bit with guys getting hurt. So, yeah, that's tough, and let's hope that they can sort of heal up before the spring, before the season comes. So, any thoughts on any of this there, guys?
Yeah, for me, spring games are always interesting because, you know, you get to see younger players step up, kind of with some of the remnants of the old crew, you know. So you get to see them kind of commingle with the guys that have been on the field for a while, and that's good for experience, you know. As much as some of the naysayers, to include James, would say, you know, hey, we don't really care that much about spring football, but I think it's a good. I think from a personnel standpoint, it's a good way to kind of see who's going to fit. Or at least who's fighting for positions going into the fall, formations wise or whatever offense they're going to run. Like, you know, Army's going to run the air raid, you know, every time in the spring game, and gives you a false sense of, like, oh my gosh, we're going to throw next season. Nah, not really. They're just doing it just to get some sets and reps. But again, I think the comment that you made about, you know, flat trajectory and the ball getting out to the running backs and the wide receivers quickly, that's good for Army. You know, that was one of the things that we didn't see, and that was one of the, you know, the differences in the Army Navy game was the ability to hit those swing passes or those short out routes and then turn them into a 5 to 7 yard gain and keep the chains moving. So I would like to see that. I know that you just got to take things as they are with, you know, Bryson Daly having probably the best year Army quarterback has had probably ever. You know, you just have to use the tools that you got to get to where you're going. But I think, you know, a little bit of diversity in the offense is not going to be a bad thing. So I'm looking forward to seeing how it shakes out coming into the fall.
So two thoughts about that. And first is that they actually ran the ball, you know, ran the offense quite a bit, and they weren't throwing as much as I've seen in the game. They probably threw twice as much as they'll throw in a regular game, but they ran the triple option offense quite a bit. And, you know, they ran the fullback dive to Briggs Bartosz, like, really a lot. Like, they gave that guy, he must have had at least 10 carries in that spring game. And the other thing about Washington, while we're talking about throwing motions. He came out and they took a couple of penalties, like a false start. And I don't know if that was him or it's just very early season, kind of a mess. But at any rate, they wound up with a first and 30. And he actually converted that thing with a 19-yard pass, a run, and then like a 9-yard pass to pick up the first down off starting off of first and 30. So I don't know when the last time we saw that was. Omar?
Yeah, I think it's interesting too. I like the move of Bartosz to fullback because I think Army has gotten a taste of what explosiveness at the fullback is. And I think they want to keep it going. Because honestly, I think my mindset, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's easier for teams to dismiss the Darnell Wolfel, Jacoby Buchanan type fullback. It's like, okay, we can hold him to 3 yards. We can, you know, commit more people to the edge. But if you have a guy like Bartosz, who used to be a slot back with big breakaway speed, can break a run 40, 50 yards anytime he can, anytime he wants. I think it leads more teams to commit more assets to the inside game and really let Army commit to the outside game, which aside from Noah Short, I want to say since 2017, the outside game's really been lacking, honestly. I mean, with the exception of Noah Short last year. So I'm excited to see how that ends up. The bad side of that is a guy like Bartosz fits well in a modern spread offense. So if we're talking about people getting poached, which is a topic for in our podcast, that's the bad side. But I'm really excited about the move of Bartosz at fullback and just like seeing those types of guys. I call it the Michael Wallace archetype for our older listeners back home.
You know, Bartosz reminded me a lot of Kanye Udo running because he really does have that kind of shifty. I don't know if he's got as much straight line breakaway speed. Like, we'll have to sort of make those decisions in the fall. But he really looked good. And it was a good combination of shiftiness and running dudes over that you like to see. One thing I'll say is it's tough in games like this because you don't know who's going to play how much. But I will say Noah Short was out there a ton, which I totally did not expect. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's just it's always going to be interesting. And I think, like Omar said, you know, one of the when we watch the offense struggle, it's because they haven't been able to set the B back up, right? So if the B back is getting, you know, 3 to 4 yards of carry in the dive, then that opens up the edge, which is, you know, makes the offense completely different. And, you know, we saw some new wrinkles this year with Bryson Daly. So if the fullback gets going, you know, you can do a quarterback follow. There's lots of other things that they can kind of vary off of that. So I think that's important as far as the offense is concerned, is to, you know, feature that fullback. You know, you're never going to have a featured back at Army, but you're going to have a featured position, and that's the B back position, and we haven't had that in a while. So I think that's trending positively.
Yeah, I will say there's nobody on the roster right now at quarterback who has that size like Bryson Daly had. Like, none of these guys are going to run through huge amounts of contact, and probably Helms is the only guy who has the body type to even attempt it. But I mean, he's 5'10", 203. He's the same size I am, like almost exactly the same size. And I'm a swimmer. So, you know, take that for what it's worth.
If you have listened to this show before, you know that we have a sponsor here, and that sponsor is Craig Oxane, area sales manager, mortgage broker at the Money Store. Craig is a class of 1994, can lend in all 50 states. He's one of the most successful VA lenders in the country. He has super competitive rates. Craig is going to give you the best deal that he possibly can. Friends, this whole mortgage process is super confusing with interest rates moving all over the place. Now is not the time to deal with some clown that's just trying to make a buck off you. Deal with somebody who actually cares, not a call center or some random big box bank or mindless website. This is actually how the West Point Network functions. Craig is helping us stay in business here at Ask for Football, and we're helping you get a better deal on a mortgage by introducing you to the very man that you need to beat. This is actually how the West Point Network functions. And hey, you know what? Craig doesn't charge lender fees for veterans. That's a huge savings of about $1,300. Get that money, friends. Anyway, Craig Oxane, area sales manager at the Money Store. Check him out. His link is on the website. And let's move on to talk about the transfer portal. Since we already talked about the spring game, and there are some unfortunate moves after that, I guess we could say that. I mean, if you're a hardcore Army fan, I would say it just makes you scratch your head and wonder what's really going on. And maybe, you know, and maybe it's not that big of a deal. Maybe it is. I don't know. But we'll talk about the transfer portal really quick. You know, a lot of guys are starting to pop out on the transfer portal now that it's available. You know, I think most notably during last season was Kanye Udo departing right after the Army-Navy game going to Arizona State. Cornerback Donovan Platt just hit the transfer portal after the spring game. I'm not sure if he's landed anywhere yet. Linebacker Elo Madozi also hit the portal and signed with Georgia. We had some plebes that hit the portal as well, but Platt and Madozi are probably the two biggest players that hit the transfer portal. Guys, what do we think? We'll go to Omar and then
Dan. Yeah, go ahead, Omar. Sorry, I was about to steal your thunder there.
Oh, no worries. So first I'm going to say, you know, of course, as you know, the relative historian, what goes around comes around for Army. And I say this because I'm going to name off some College Football Hall of Famers. Chris Cagle, Harry Lighthorse Wilson, Elmer Oliphant, all were guys that actually played, actually used their eligibility at four-year institutions back in the 1920s and ended up also playing three more years for Army. And this led to the eligibility kind of kerfuffle that led to the last hiatus in the Army-Navy game. So I'm not saying we deserve it, but I'm saying there's nothing new under the sun. I'm going to preface with that. But I think I'm a glass half full guy with this because, yeah, I'm disappointed in this. But I also think Elo Madozi, I guess, parlaying 1 year of being a great starter for Army in the AAC to play for Georgia could attract more legitimate Group of Five talent. And whether it's right that a lot of these recruits are going to use this as, I guess, a two-year opportunity you know, to play to, you know, hopefully attract for the Power Five, that's a question for the Department of the Army because we are in a massive manning shortage, right? But I will say that, I mean, we could attract more talent with this. This in itself could be a recruiting tool, but in itself too, having people think like that, you have time to kind of mold them and shape them into believing in the Army Brotherhood and believing in a West Point education. So if someone comes in with that mindset, at least you have their foot in the door and you can transform them to buy into the Brotherhood. And they can see that, hey, the grass isn't greener on the other side. Like, for instance, Isaiah Alston. I mean, if you want to catch two passes in the Pop-Tarts Bowl, you know, that's great. No offense to him. I hope his family doesn't come after me. But
I mean, you're going to see him again. He just signed with Tulane.
Oh, he signed? I thought it was an offer.
I don't know if he signed. I assumed he was going to take that one. But, yeah, we'll see him at Mikey Stadium sooner or later.
Yeah, but like that's my glass half full type thing where it's like I think in the same way the first step of this is like when I guess then President Trump turned president again ended up signing that bill to allow players to, you know, pursue professional opportunities, right? I guess that increased our talent pool a little bit. I think this, while it may have negative impacts, I mean, for the team, we could get more guys that we wouldn't have otherwise recruited, get their foot in the door, and then we can really develop them into really buying into West Point and avoiding them going to Georgia. But if we get them for 2 years, we get them for 2 years. I mean, it's an existential problem with the service academies and now in today's college football.
It's tough to evaluate Kanye Udo's decision. I mean, the only part of that I really disliked was that it was like the Army-Navy game ended, we sang the anthem, and then this guy, you know, yeeted himself out the door. And I just didn't love the way that went down. But maybe that was the only way it was ever going to go down. I hope he got a deal. I will say Modozi, you know, if he got $100,000 to go to Georgia to play linebacker, I mean, that's real money. So take that for what it's worth.
Yeah. I'm mixed on this and I have lots of thoughts, but I will probably save them for roundtable. We'll dive into it a little bit deeper. But, you know, when you look at it from the perspective of opportunities, closing the door on an opportunity, like you're never going to get an opportunity to go to West Point twice, right? And if you shut the door on that opportunity, you're starting all over again. So there is no, oh, crap, I want to get commissioned and be an officer. You know, yeah, maybe you could do ROTC at Georgia if that's your thing. But
not while you're playing.
Right. And that's the thing. So you've literally taken yourself out of an opportunity for your future. Right. And like we can all say this as, you know, the old heads on the call, at least Dan and myself, is a lot of, you know, in your 40s, you're going to be worth about $250,000 a year, you know, whether that be retirement or salary or a combination of the two or whatever. So you're really cutting yourself off from a future opportunity that you can't see right now. And again, that comes with wisdom and age. And it's unfortunate that we don't have the opportunity to have the same conversations that the young men and women are having with their folks or their agents before they make a decision like that. Kevin, right. you look like you're chomping at the bit, man.
Well, first, I want to apologize for being late. That's on me. I'm in the middle of a PCS right now, and just things are crazy. I'm actually getting out. My wife's staying in. But I do want to give one caveat to that, and this is you guys may remember him, Donovan Franklin. Okay. He played when I was there. So I graduated 2016. Donovan was probably 2019, 2020 maybe. He left. I think he left the school for whatever reason. I'm not going to get into that. But he went to Kansas.
Okay.
He played at Kansas, and he commissioned as an officer. Now he's in.
Wow.
He's in the 25th ID. He's a lieutenant, probably going to be a captain here soon. But that is somebody who I think had the calling for service. He went and handled his business, went to Ranger School, infantry from Kansas. Still doing his thing. Was an incredible running back, long-legged, long-armed, fast. I think he played as a freshman, which would have been my senior year, maybe. But again, he left the academy, still commissioned, and did it. But I think, you know, Rob, to your point, you're not coming back to West Point twice. And as cool as it is to have, you know, I was on West Point for 2 years. Like, you know, you're not an old grad. So I get your point.
Awesome. Well, that's a good tee up for the interview, right? So we'll transition right there. So today we're joined by our special guest, Army football alum and all around great human being, Kelvin Wyatt. White, thanks for joining us today. So we'll start with the basics as always. Company major, first assignment, and what was your biggest takeaway that you learned at West Point about West Point after leaving?
So D3 is a plebe, scrambled into E1 like E1, damn it, for the last 3 years. Major was engineering management in the systems department. And then a lot of old guys, and I would consider myself old. I know that I'm not as old as you guys, but you know, I got some city miles on me now, so it's I feel it. But you know, everyone talks about like, oh, it's really hard to be here, but it's the best place in the world to be from. And I can say, living my life now and being a beneficiary of somebody who is from West Point, it is something that you, when you're 18 and someone says that to you, you're just like, you know, it's like the same thing when someone tells you like, oh, hug your kids or, you know, take a bunch of pictures. It's like, yeah, whatever. And then they're grown up. Now you're just like, you know, like looking at it. And it's the same phenomenon because you don't really know when you're 18, you're like, hey, you don't know what it's going to be like to have Ray Odierno smack you on the butt or Vinny Viola smack you on the butt in the locker room, or, you know, you're like, ah, whatever. And I'll tell you from my experience, being from West Point has been the best thing, you know, for me. And there's so many different things and there's so many things you can be proud of to have it. But I think the most important thing is the immediate credibility that you get from being from West Point, knowing that you're capable of doing hard things. And then obviously the service to our country, which is, you know, hugely incredible. And to all you guys who've done long careers, it's even more humbling. So appreciate it.
No, that's great. So we talked about the spring game before you jumped on. What did spring game mean to you when you were playing? Was it important or is it essentially just parents practice? Like, how did that work out?
I know we'll jump into this conversation later about like the differences in the, you know, kind of the contrast between Coach Ellerson and Coach Munkin. I do feel, again, humbled and honored that Coach Munkin's still coaching, you know, yeah. Shout out to this guy at the academy. So it's like, I still feel like I'm part of the academy, right? Like I can call Coach Munkin, I can talk to him. I have the opportunity to like, you know, be close to the program still. So to me, I feel like I'm like still there. For some guys before me, you know, had Bobby Ross and then, you know, Coach Ellison and all these different, you know, coaching staff, like you lose out on kind of like the longevity. So I will tell you, when I was first there, spring ball didn't really mean much to me. My freshman and sophomore year, it was a glorified parents game. And, you know, it wasn't that crazy because everybody looked forward to the summer and all the things. But I would tell you that my sophomore going into my senior year or my junior year, which Coach Munkin came, and that was the epic kicking all the seniors out and sending us to the core, putting us in the visitors stands, which are no longer there anymore. That was all of that timing. And I will tell you that it was like it was hard. I was just changing positions, fighting for my, you know, really fighting for my life, like R. Kelly would say, to get on the field. Right.
Yeah.
And after that, it became this thing where like, it is important. You know, Coach brought like the legacy of old players coming back and being captains. You know, I saw Johnny and Cole and Elijah at the game or at the spring game. And it was just like, it's cool, right? Because it's important. It's important to know that the things that you're doing are important. And, you know, every time I tell somebody that we have guys in the NFL, they don't believe me until you show them the Super Bowl rings, right? You know, Brett just got one this year. So, but yeah. It's a big deal now. I can tell you that.
So can you talk us about sort of when you realize you're actually, you know, making this team, you're going to start, you're going to play versus when you were on the scout team? And like, it struck me when I was writing this, that if you're not one of the starters, then the spring game is a huge deal. And if you are one of the starters, then you're trying to be focused because you're trying to be focused. And maybe coming in with Munkin, it's a little different because he didn't know any of you guys. And it was pretty obvious that there was some turnover that needed to happen anyway. But can you sort of talk us through like your journey, I guess, for lack of a better term, to actually get on the field?
Yeah. Well, starting as a quarterback, right?
Yeah.
6'4", 215, slower than molasses in January. but hey, I could sling that thing now. So
yeah.
Really that the way that you kind of put it out there is perfect. Like when you're underclassmen and you're like fighting for your position on the depth chart going into camp, and you're like trying to, you know, show your value, it is incredibly important to show up. And, yeah, you know, and to do it. And then I think as you're kind of like settled in, I think the cool thing about Coach Munkin is like, I mean, he showed us when he first got there that like nobody is, like everybody's replaceable. Like,
yeah, right.
You know, like the famous scene from Coach Carter where the two guys quit, you know, the best, oh, that was our best player. And he's like, well, we'll have new best players. And I think that kind of mantra is what Coach Munkin had, probably still has. You know, but I talked to Rob a little while ago about like kind of passing the torch down, and I'm sure the players now, you know, they run their own locker room at this point. It's been a while since Coach Munkin's been there. So, he doesn't really have to do like the whole hands-on general manager thing, head coach, you know, in the locker room stuff. He probably does, but at the end of the day, like you have player peer leadership.
Right. Yep.
And I think that part of the accountability is like, if you're a senior and you've been a starter, you know, I look at guys like Elijah Riley, right? He's a 4-year starter.
Right.
I knew he was going to be an NFL caliber guy when he first came in. I was a graduate assistant. But he showed up every day. Like he knew he was going to be a starter his sophomore, junior, and senior year. And he was still practicing and playing like the best version of himself, the best player on the field.
I mean, that is why though, you know, that's the only way that happens is, You just go balls out and yeah, I don't know. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So why West Point? I mean, obviously it seemed like it worked out for you, but like it's not an immediately obvious decision, I think. Maybe not to the people on this podcast, but just generally.
So it was my visit there. Adisa King was there.
Yeah.
And you guys know Adisa, Brigade Commander now, 3rd Brigade, 25th ID. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, and he was a baby major when I got there, like baby major. So he wasn't even like he was still a captain and all that stuff.
And
I think, you know, not to get too political and not doing all this stuff again, but just seeing him,
a
football player who was able to come back, who deployed, who like fought for our country, who was like had that energy, right? You can't walk by a decent
Absolutely.
And not just get like fired, like you got like struck by lightning or something like that. And I saw him, and then I emulated him immediately, and I was like, oh, I got to be like that guy. And then he came back around, and you know, Coach Wall has been, you know, at West Point for probably since 1802. I don't know. but just having like that continuity, right? Because like, you know, Adisa would come back and talk to Coach Wall, and it would just be like, oh, this guy is the man. Then he worked for the Secretary of the Army for a while. And just like that type of professionalism, that type of like, you know, demeanor, like he just had energy. He was just doing the things that I wanted to do, which, you know, ultimately I was able to do. But I think coming in and having somebody that you can look at and be like, oh yeah, like that's the kind of guy. So that's happened on my official visit, you know. And then I didn't have money. I didn't have, you know, I didn't have any, you know, I mean, like, let's talk about it.
No, right? I mean, it is what it is, right?
Like I could have maybe got some FAFSA. I could have went to, you know, some PSAC school or, something in the Patriot League. I think Georgetown asked me to be like the Cam Newton of the Patriot League when I was in high school. So like, they were like gassing me up, dude. I'm telling you what, they were like, I mean, and it was working because, you know, I thought I was going to go and be like this guy who was like, you know, throwing touchdown passes and stuff. And, you know, it humbled me when I got to West Point and, you know, my journey and stuff like that. But it was the right decision for me. It put structure, put foundation, you know, allowed me to do so many, it unlocked so many doors, right? Like, and it's not even like it opened doors, it blew doors off the hinges. It like, you know, just crazy opportunities. And like, you know, I tell everybody now hindsight's 20/20, but I'd do it 1,000 times out of 1,000. You know, it's just like, it's easy. It's a good decision. And, you know, it's, again, just the best thing, really the best thing that's happened to me, until other better things happened.
I got to say, so I have a college senior who's about to graduate and a college sophomore, rising junior, and watching them struggle with the lack of structure at their civilian universities made me appreciate West Point in a way that I don't think I ever would have if I hadn't watched them just sort of, you know, lose their minds trying to figure out how to manage some of that stuff. So a lot in retrospect, a lot of the stuff that I thought was awful back then probably helped more than I would have wanted to admit on my own. So yes. I hear what you're saying there quite a bit with that stuff. So let's talk a little bit on the field here. A debate that we've had on this show quite a bit is, do we want to be under center or do we want to run out of the shotgun? You know, 2 years ago we had like 4th-and-1 running the shotgun. Yeah. Last year, you know, guys in the firsty club are like screaming at us, why are they in the shotgun? You want to give us your opinion on Army offense out of the shotgun?
Yeah, I think, and this is I was at the Army Football Club golf outing last year, and I had about 3 hours of conversation with Coach Munkin, which was crazy. It was just like, you know, awesome, and he was able to talk to the guys there, and when they changed kind of the rule of the blocking and. You know, cut blocks downfield and inside the box. I think they tried to get a little bit of distance away from big, strong, fast off defensive lines. You know, because at a time like we were undersized, and I think we kind of closed the gap there a little bit. But at the end of the day, like, you know, we're still not you know, as big and strong as some of the guys. So I think creating some space. You know, allows us to kind of have a longer time to make decisions, especially at the quarterback position. Andy Guider was my quarterback coach when I was in my freshman and sophomore year. And he's a math mind. I don't know if you guys remember Coach Guider, math mind. He broke down the dirt formula, distance equals rate times time. Okay. On the board, and explain to me, the farther I get away from the center and the offensive line, the more time I have to make this.
Interesting. Okay.
when you go to the shotgun, now you get a little bit more space to play in there and you know, make it easier. And I think all of those things together kind of are variables for why we decided to do that. And I talked to Coach Munkin. I'm glad that, you know, we made some changes there. And I think Coach Worley had like incredible command of the offense this year. Like I just
loved
watching it. And I think that changed some stuff too. But, you know, it's if you're a shotgun team and your center and quarterback exchange the ball through shotgun, that's what you practice.
Yep.
Going under center changes things. It changes the dynamics. How are your feet? How does he come off the ball? How does all of those? And it, for us, you know, consumers of the game that have been out for a while, like you don't. It's like just run the damn ball, right? That's like run the damn ball. It's like it's frustrating, but at the end of the day, like all of those little things are important. How is the, you know, is the ball wet? Is the center, does he sweat a lot? Like I'm telling you, like some Cordell Stewart stuff, but all of this stuff adds up. And then you get comfortable doing what you do. If I'm normally in the shotgun, then I'm going to be in the shotgun. And, you know, but I think now it's nice that we kind of got back to that, you know, that thing. Coach Munkin, I'll never forget. He's like, if you can't get a yard on fourth and one, like you don't deserve to be on the field. If your offensive line can't move 1 yard, then it's a problem. And I think it's awesome and it's good. And when we win, it's good.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Yeah. So nothing.
So the most impressive thing is that they can do both. Is what I think I'm hearing you say.
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
All right. So. We talked about the transfer portal. I don't think I want to beat that one up again. What's favorite memory as a from your playing days or from your time at West Point?
It changes. I think it changes a bunch. Like this picture behind me is probably the one that's like most dug into me. This is carrying the American flag out in Beaver Stadium.
Okay.
Being a product of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Growing up and seeing Happy Valley and then being able to play there.
That was an amazing game too.
I mean, it was a phenomenal game, you know, and it was a little wet, so the fumbles maybe. but I think that was probably like the most memorable for me. I got to play with against some of my friends who went to Penn State playing there still. So that was like cool. But I think the most memorable moment for me was the Hail Mary against Navy in 2015.
Yeah.
You know, I think. Yeah, DeAndre Bell was my best man at my wedding, so it's all love, water under the bridge there. Should have caught the ball. I don't know what to him this time. Should have caught the ball.
All right, so I'm going to ask you one more question, and then I'll turn it over to Rob to grill you on the questions from the Firsty Club, which are like very detailed. So I'll just you can prepare yourself now. But what are you doing now? You said you're getting out. You said your wife is staying in. I want to say that I saw you post a picture of snowboarding on Instagram like years ago. So if that was actually you, tell me how you got into snowboarding too.
That was me. Yeah. So okay. Again, this whole thing ties back together. I was I was supposed to go to Fort Savannah? Fort Stewart.
Yeah, Georgia. Yeah, that's where I went. Yep.
Some stuff happened.
Didn't okay.
Yep. I talked to Colonel Anderson, who was like our head OR then, and I talked straight to General Caslin, and I 2 days later I'm on orders to go to Germany. So. Go to Ranger School, Airborne School, go head to Germany. And the picture of me snowboarding was in Austria. So that's where I learned how to snowboard in the Austrian Alps, you know. And everybody else is beneath me. So no, just it was an incredible experience. Again, all of this stuff I can just say, like, doesn't happen if I don't have the opportunity to go to West Point. So just to throw it back there. But so I'm getting medically separated. I'm currently with the 75th Ranger Regiment, Fort Moore or Fort Benning, Georgia.
Okay.
It was a great, great experience. I think a mix of football, tore my ACL, had some microfractures in my femur, jumping out of airplanes. I'm going to need a knee replacement here soon. So medically separated. My wife, we did meet in Germany. In Copenhagen, Denmark.
Oh, there you go.
She's a product of Notre Dame ROTC. And So I'm actually in South Bend. I'm on my terminal leave. My wife is going to be the assistant PMS at Notre Dame.
Okay.
Starting on May 1st. And you know, she'll ride it out here in South Bend, and we'll kind of make a decision based on that. But as it sits now, I'm going to enroll in Mendoza College of Business to, you know, attend there and get my MBA. There's a possibility I'm on the wait list right now for the JD program here as well at Notre Dame.
Oh, nice. Nice.
To do a dual degree at a JD MBA. So, you know, we're pulling. I'm here. I'm putting in some. If I do the dual degree, I'll be here for 4 years. If not, we'll do two here. And then, you know, my wife will transition and we'll find somewhere on the East Coast that's close to our family to, you know, to continue to raise our family.
Listen, I work in Manhattan every day. So when you get here, let me know, because I know where you're going to wind up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. So we've got a whole list of questions. We put this out to the Firsty Club, kind of prepped them for that. I had to cut this first question down because it came from Terry Brandon, and he's very, very concerned about the use of the tight ends because his son is one. But his first question is, why does it seem that Army hesitates to involve the tight ends more in the passing game, especially as a check down receiver on first down or leveraging size mismatches in the red zone? Also, some of the 12 and 22 personnel packages that keep the option running, as well as the split backs and the wide receivers. So that's a lot of words, so why don't we use the tight ends?
Yeah, I think it's really hard to find people who can, and I'm not saying this is like I thought I could do both. I probably couldn't, but it's really hard to find people that can do both, because offensive linemen can, you know, cut off better than a tight end can. You know, wide receivers can catch usually better than a tight end can. And I think the problem is, like, as we talk about check downs and stuff, like, if you've ever watched, you guys watch Army football, everybody loves it. We're not just doing like a 7-step drop and like, you know, doing double check downs. I think there's like potential for some like Y screens and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, you know, when you are on a team like this, I think that the best argument would be in the red zone, jump balls, you know, things like that. But like, why would I not give it to a slot back on a screen? Or why would I not? Cause at the end of the day, like I'm not as fast as these guys, right? Like I'm not as, you know, Hayden Reed would be much better to give the ball in space than to me. Right. So if you can find a way to get your skilled players, like the guys who are explosive, you know, an opportunity to get the ball in those situations, I think, you know, we kind of throw these names around, like, you know, Travis Kelce and things like that. And it's like, it's like the schemes, right? It's like we're not just dropping back and throwing, you know, deep balls like Ty Montgomery did against us and things like that. So, you know, it is challenging because when we do our play action passes or we do hit some big plays, like they've got to hurt. And I can tell you from experience, you know, I wasn't hurting nobody. I was running some fakes, I think that's why, because it's so calculated, right? You run. They pack the box with nine guys, and then, you know, you can just hit them deep. But it's got to be one of those things that I do think there's a time and place for the mismatches, but at the same time, like, you're not gonna do like jump balls on and stuff like that if you're trying to, you know, get into third and shorts and fourth and shorts. And you know, I'm sure if Cody Worley's watching this, I'm sure he'll, you know, do a little pop pass to the tight end next year. We'll see.
For sure. All right. So, you know, and this ties right into the next question. It seems like Navy and Air Force tend to leverage their wide receivers and their slot backs more in the passing game and wheels and screen routes. And I think that honestly was the difference in the Army-Navy game. Do you think that there's the potential there for Army to do something similar, or are we going to stick with, you know, what got us to the show this year?
Yeah, I think you can add wrinkles. I do think, you know, you have the ability to, you know, see something that worked and then capitalize on it. But I personally think that we do the things that we're good at and we just keep capitalizing on it. Like Coach has the seven commandments, I think, You know, I think there's still seven. It's been a couple of years. He probably added one, took one away. Who knows what he's done now? But, like, you know, you got to run the ball, stop the run, right? Like, that's it. And you see the programs who are, like, you know, doing really well, right? Like, I'm in Notre Dame right now. Look,
yeah.
They run the ball. You know,
yeah. They went to the absolutely.
They run the football. And when you watch them play against Penn State, they stop the run. It's one of those things where, like, it's not super flashy in things, but I do think that, you know, Coach Worley, Coach Munkin, you know, Coach Vitti, all the guys on offense are finding ways to get our playmakers the ball. You know, whether that was like putting Hayden Reed at slot back or moving him back to be back or, you know, wherever they're going to be at based on the personnel that we have, I think there are opportunities for wrinkles, but I think that we just keep doing the same thing, right? Like I was an option or a spread offense quarterback in high school. And, you know, now I give LPDs on the triple option because I just like believe in it. You know what I'm saying? I just believe in it.
So. Yeah, for sure. All right. So last question, and this one probably will take a little bit more time. We talked about it briefly when we talked before, but what was the transition between Coach Ellerson and Coach Munkin like? And I know you told a story briefly, but I'm sure you got a lot more juicy details, and I think our audience would appreciate it.
Yeah. So Coach Ellerson was like a company man. And there will never, ever be Coach Rich Ellerson slander come out of my mouth ever. Because ultimately he gave me the opportunity to go to West Point. And you know, Drew and I are still friends to this day. And he really did do a good job taking care of me and, you know, putting me on the path that I'm on. So I do think the coaching styles, though, are much different. Like Coach Ellerson was, you're at West Point, be a cadet, and then, you know, play football. And I think that's fine. You continue to build leaders of character, you know, who are trained and proficient in their warrior task and drills or whatever. And but like Coach Munkin came in and was like, nah, like you're a football player. I'm not here to hear all that stuff. And I'll tell you, a lot of people are like, you know, up in arms about it. But like at the end of the day, like the leadership principles that you learn and that you continue to use, you know, in combat and anywhere in the Army that is a people business are forged between the white lines in Mikey Stadium. Like it doesn't matter what class you took. It doesn't matter about PE-450 or MX-400 officership. Like where I found out about leadership was, you know, between the hashes, the period. And I think it's probably on the same thing about like the basketball court, a volleyball court or whatever, what have you. But like, that is where you like learn sacrifice. You learn all the, you know, compromise and a lot of the things that, you know, make you a better leader. So I will say that it was crazy. The contrast was stark. You know, there's probably guys that don't like Coach Munkin that I played with. You know, because again, going back to the first question, they were seniors. They were 4-year starters. Coach Monk was like, "You suck." You know what I mean? Like I don't know who told you were good. Like you're not good. And then we like lost 4-year like guys who started for 3 years, guys who started for 2 years, guys who were like, "Yeah, I'm not playing for this guy," and. You know, there's probably still resentment from some of those guys, but you know, I do feel impartial because like Coach Munkin was, you know, did some cool stuff for me as a human being, and I'll jump into that probably a little later. I don't want to take up everyone's time, but he had to show people what winning was about. You know, he talked about like, hey, you know, in order to do something you've never done, you've got to, you know, be willing to do something you've never done. Or I think that quote was something like that. And he showed us what like winning was. Like I tell the story. We all had, if you've been into Kim Z, like in the auditorium, we all used to like bring our cleats and like throw them on the ground. And it was all crazy. And the first day is like spring ball, right? I think it was spring ball. We were doing some practice. And he like comes in, he's like, he has that demeanor, right? Now he's like a little silver fox, so he's a little bit older now. But before he was like young Monk. And if I can I curse here?
Yeah.
If we have to edit it, we
will. No cursing. All right. Well, he came in and said, "You guys go get your cleats and put them back in your locks. You have 2 minutes." And there's 180 of us. There's no chance we're getting through these doors in 2 minutes. And we didn't do it right. Missed a time hack. Very similar to people in the army, right? Like, unrealistic time hack. You missed it. Now it's time to play FF games. If you guys know FF games, he takes us outside, and like I think for the first day we didn't even practice. I think we just got like tore up, right? And then the next day he comes in, he's like, "Hey, you guys, this is what a winner's locker looks like." And it like nothing's in there. It was like a jersey. All the cubbies were like perfectly pushed back and all this stuff. And he was like, "This is the standard for the locker rooms." And everyone's like, "Yeah, whatever. Just throw our cleats on the bench and go about our day." The next day, come in trash bags and lockers, all like 1 through 80 seniors, upperclassmen, gone. Literally just like trash bags. He's like, "If you have a trash bag in your locker, you're in the visitors' locker room for spring ball." I'm like, what does that mean? So sure enough, we went and we were just in the visitors' locker room. No heat. Water's cold. Spring ball. You guys know spring ball. It's cold in New York. It was just like this crazy, crazy experience for us. And then we did mat drills, right? And you guys, we still talk about mat drills here and then. And that was where I saw boys kind of turn into men. Jeff Bacon, you guys know Jeff, like one of my best friends, talk to him every single day. Jeff had some stuff happen to him on during spring ball, during mat drills. And he was just like, "Where's Jeff Bacon at?" And he wasn't there, right? So he's gone. And he was like, he was like, "Oh, Jeff doesn't want to be at spring ball. He just thinks he's better than everybody because he's been a starter forever." And, and it was just like this crazy, crazy opportunity for us, to get better. So there's my son, by the way. So, but it was one of those things, right? And then we had people quit and then all these things. And I think the thing I'm trying to get at is he came in and he did this stuff. He like put his finger in guys' chest and was like, "You think you're good. You won 2 games last year. You suck. You did this. You guys suck." And then later on, I think it was in fall camp or something, and we're introducing ourselves, and he's like, comes in with a bag of like a silk bag, and it has all these rings in it. Like, I thought this guy was like Wilt Chamberlain or something. And he just like slams all these rings on the table, and we're like, "What the hell is this guy doing?" He's like, 8-5 bowl game. And he just does it for every single thing, like from his time at the boat school up through Georgia Southern when they beat Florida and all this stuff. And he's like, "I know how to win. I'm a winner." And everyone's like, "Oh my God, this guy's crazy." Yeah, he's crazy. and I think it took a lot of like us believing that we were like, we could win. And I talk about this a little bit. There's like a forgotten era back in the 80s, like I think the late 70s and the early 80s. And I think like now from like 14 to 16 is probably like the foundation era, because that was like we didn't win a lot. We didn't win a lot of games. But at the end of the day, like Andrew King came from that cloth. There's guys. And then as it just kind of been passed down, right? I mentioned this again. Coach Monk is probably not the guy who's like putting his finger in dudes' chests anymore. It's probably a player. It's probably a guy who's, played a bunch of games, who's a winner. He knows what winning's like is supposed to be, right? Like that was probably Bryson Daly last year, or just being able to pass that down and like have that peer leadership. And I think Coach Monken brought in like winners. Mack Brown came in, Frank Beamer came in, Lou Holtz came in. And he talked to us about just like what you have to do to be a winner. And then I think holding people accountable, right? Like if anybody remembers, I'm not going to say the H word, but fall camp is pretty crazy on the fourth floor of Kinsey. And there's like some stuff, rituals that happened. And, you know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Well, long story short, Coach Monken had walked in on on one of our, like, you know, fall camp festivities. And I will tell you that I never ran faster in my life. So I was like up doing all this stuff. Lights come on. Someone says like, "Hey, turn the lights off." There's like strobe lights and it was all crazy. And Coach Munkin walks in and he was like, "If you're a senior, you have 5 minutes to be out on the field." This is 10:30 at night. And I think statute of limitations probably gone on this already. So Coach Munkin had these guys out there till like 3 a.m. And then they woke up at 5.
Let me just tell you, as I am a total believer in that, because I swam all 4 years and, you know, got hazed on the bus, got beaten up on the bus on my way back from our first meet when I won my event. And I was like, "I'll just take my 9 points back and you can fucking lose."
Yeah.
Because I was so mad.
Yeah. And I think, but the point is he hammered them.
Yeah.
And then at 5 a.m, the entire athletic staff comes in and he makes us do up downs. Like, it's literally like some Remember the Titans stuff. You know? And he said, and this is the thing, and anybody who was there will forever remember this. He said, "If you can't do the up downs, go pack your locker and go back down to the core." And in that group, let me tell you, Larry Dixon, Jeff Bacon, AJ Scher, those are three of our offensive starters, or three offensive starters and our one defensive captain in the core to go into fall camp. And that was like the Coach Carter thing where, like, yeah, he's the best player on the team. Like, somebody's going to be better. We'll find the new best. And just that mentality. And I'll tell you, our senior year, we lost 7 games by 33 points, one possession games. Yep. And then after that, we won 8-5. Then we won 10 games a couple years after that, 11 games after that, 12. And I'm not saying that we're the reason. I'm not saying that. But what I will say is that Andrew King, you know, put his finger into Jeremy Timpf and Andrew King, pass it on to Cole Christensen, pass it on to Johnny. And that, again, that development, that's why it's so important. You know, Coach Munkin talked about Johnny Radigan and didn't start until he was a senior. And that's developing leaders of character. I want to throw this out there too before I get off my soapbox. Cole Christensen, Johnny Radigan, Elijah Riley would be the best officers in the Army if they stayed in the Army. So let's not get it all twisted of like, oh, they get to be out in, you know, the NFL doing their stuff. Like, they would be the best wherever they went because they're good leaders. They're good, solid human beings. And you know, they'll do what they need to do. But I just want to throw that out there because a lot of people feel kind of like, oh, why do they get to go to the NFL? Like, they can do whatever, like, they're dogs. So,
yeah. I think Coach Munkin, the product that he's put into the Army speaks for itself.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you know, speaking personally, I always say I learned more from college sports than I learned from college. And I'll die with that on my tombstone.
Yeah.
100%. 100%. So we got one last commercial. Kelvin, thank you very much for your time and your insight. Like, this is a pretty unvarnished look into the locker room, at least during your experience. And that's great because for two reasons. One, because like the Firsty Club is going to enjoy this, but the other part of it is telling the story of a former player. Because one of the things that we don't talk about a lot is like, we've had 20 years of combat, you know, and you had a lot of guys that, you know, opted to take a less demanding course after the academy. And it doesn't, you know, right, wrong, or indifferent. Like, some people have regrets, some people don't. But at the end of the day, I can tell that you're, you know, truly proud to be a member of the team and proud to be a member of the Long Gray Line. And it shows in the way that you talk and the way that you've engaged with us today. Dano, you want to do the commercial?
Yeah. So let's keep this short, right? So we brought in Lynn Fern as our new photographer here at Azure Football. And it's awesome because she's contributed a lot with her photos and just being on hand and stuff. But it's a challenge for us because, like, we got to pay Lynn, who's a working mother, for her time, right? She's at prom right now with her daughter, helping her daughter get ready. Like, that's a real thing that, you know, is like a concern for families. So Astro football is growing and it's awesome, but that growth comes with like real challenges and real expenses. And we pay for that stuff with your support. It's not complicated. We said this with the Craig Oxane commercial, right? Like, we're helping, you know, he's helping us stay in business and we're helping you find a guy for your mortgage, and like what comes around goes around. So, you know, on our Patreon at the yearling level, as I said, you know, you get access to Lynn's photos, weekly games on the locks of the week, early access to our shows. At the Cal level, you get to, you know, be on the show and comment like Ray has done a couple of times here. At the first year level, you know, you got the real sickos talking Army sports every day, all day. And we couldn't do that. We couldn't do this without the support of those folks. So I'll just throw that out there for whoever wants to hear it. And that's enough for me, I think.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to talk about lacrosse. We'll probably talk about that again sometimes because we're going to wait for the RPI stuff to shake out. We mentioned it briefly at the beginning of the show. Hopefully things will go well. Both men and women won against Navy, which is always great. And really appreciate you guys coming on. But, hey, this is the Astro Football Army Football Show. Spring sports update. We had a pretty great guest on today. And for the crew here, I'd like to say thanks. I'm Rob in Fayetteville, North Carolina. We've got Omar calling out of the great state of Georgia, Kelvin White in the home of Touchdown Jesus, and Dano Icabesa calling to you out of coastal Connecticut.
Kelvin, thank you so much for coming on, man. What an awesome interview. One of our best. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, guys. Thank you so much for allowing me to be here, and I apologize again for being late.
No worries. Separ Gumby, man. And as always, hey, beat Navy.
Beat them.
Thanks for listening to this week's Ask for Football Army Football Show. We hope you enjoyed our deep dive into Army football. Remember, whether you're cheering in the stands or following along from home, get all your updates on the Army football team at askforfootball.com. And as a special thanks, we would like to thank our sponsor, Jocelyn Bradley Real Estate. If you're looking to buy or sell a home, Jocelyn Bradley is the expert you need. Visit jocelynbradley.com for all your real estate needs. Don't forget, subscribe, leave us a review, and follow us on social media for all the latest updates. Until next time, go Army, beat Navy!